The 16th century English philosopher, statesman, and scientist, Francis Bacon, famously stated, quote, "Some books are to be tasted, others to be swallowed, and some few to be chewed and digested. That is," he went on to explain, quote, "some books are to be read only in parts, others to be read, but not curiously, and some few to be read wholly and with diligence and attention," close quote. Welcome to this, the first and introductory podcast in Wyoming Catholic College's series on the great books. I'm Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, Director of Distance Learning at the college and your host. Each weekly podcast will feature an interview with one of our professors who will introduce you to one of the books from the college's integrated liberal arts curriculum, a book we believe should be read wholly and with diligence and attention. We plan to feature books such as Homer's Iliad, Plutarch's Lives, Paradise Lost by John Milton, The Consolation of Philosophy by Boethius, Euclid's work on geometry, Sir Isaac Newton's Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy, and other works that have come to be called the great books. On this first podcast, however, we thought we'd begin by asking, what are the great books? What makes them great? And why should they be read wholly and with diligence and attention? To answer those questions, we're joined by Dr. Thaddeus Kaczynski. Dr. Kaczynski is Associate Professor of Philosophy and Humanities at Wyoming Catholic College, as well as our Academic Dean. Prior to earning his PhD in philosophy from the Catholic University of America, Dr. Kaczynski earned a Master's in Liberal Arts, studying the great books at St. John's College Graduate Institute in Annapolis, Maryland. Welcome, Dr. Kaczynski. Let's get right to it. When we talk about the great books, what do we mean?
Well, generally speaking, it's literally the greatest books that we know of, inherited and studied and puzzled about for thousands of years, that constitute the kind of canon of the Western intellectual tradition. But in another sense, about the 1920s, there was a great books movement in education. With such names as Mortimer Adler, Stringfellow Barr, Scott Buchanan, such institutions as Columbia University, St. John's College. And in the early 20th century, there was a movement away from specialization, narrow scientific education, to a kind of broad, integrated, multidisciplinary return to the sources of our culture, of our identity. And great books collections were then created by some of these professors who selected what they considered to be the most influential, the most significant, the most relevant texts of 25 centuries of Western culture and published these in collections that you could purchase and now find on the internet.
Was there an agreed upon criteria?
Mortimer Adler speaks about three criteria for a great book. It should be contemporary in a sense that it's relevant to contemporary issues, ideas, conversations. It should also be relevant to 25 centuries of inquiry and thinking and conversation and so that it incorporates and substantiates, our culture's memory, collective memory, and understanding of ourselves. And so those are the basic criteria for the great books. I would add that if you want to speak about the nature of a great book in itself, I think the main criterion for that would be in its richness, its sort of inexhaustibility. One could read these texts. These are not the kind of texts one reads once and gets information from them. They're not reference books. These are texts that can be read and contemplated and puzzled about over and over again and seem to never lose their newness and freshness.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly been my experience reading things like the Iliad, the Odyssey, Dante's Divine Comedy, some T.S. Eliot's poems. You read it again and again, and you appreciate it again and again.
Yeah, although these texts are, of course, written by particular authors in cultures very different from ours, different time periods with different mindsets, in Greece and Rome and Italy, as well as Spain and Russia, there's something nevertheless timeless and transcending about these works. They seem to capture something of a universal human nature. The same issues that we're talking about today were talked about by Plato, Augustine, Dante, Thomas Aquinas. And so that's another element of these books. They seem to transcend time and space.
Now, a complaint about the great books as they stand, as the list sort of stands, is that these are, to put it nicely, Eurocentric, or to put it less nicely, written by dead white men. How do you respond to that?
Well, there's of course truth to that. We're talking about the Western tradition. There is a canon of Eastern classics from China and India and the Middle East, and some colleges actually have a whole program devoted to the Eastern classics. But I would just say that, you know, being an American, being a North American, being from Europe, being a Westerner requires one to understand as much as possible one's identity and the influences and culture and history that sort of makes you who you are. And multiculturalism as an ideology tends to emphasize, you know, a kind of deracinated understanding of oneself as a sort of cosmopolitan, or it de-emphasizes, you know, personal and local, national, ethnic, religious particularity. And I think it's important for education that one gains self-understanding first and foremost. And that's just not possible if one is trying to study, you know, everything at once, or all different cultures. One has to understand one's own culture. And in a broad sense, the great books integrate, you know, a diversity of viewpoints of different ethnicities and races and religions. And so I would say that, in a sense, the great books are precisely multicultural in the best sense of the term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they may both be dead white men, but Dostoevsky and, say, Rousseau don't have a whole lot in common.
That's right. And there's something, although Western culture is Western culture, the genius of the West, especially influenced by Judeo-Christian theology and religious practice and culture, you know, as Christopher Dawson, among others, has talked about, is, you know, beginning with the Axial Age, with the Greeks, with Socrates especially, and the great century of Pericles. I mean, you had this desire to reach out to truth in a universal sense, to understand being in all its facets. This is not a parochial matter here, and the ideas we meet in the great books, although coming from the West and Europe, primarily dead white men, these are ideas that transcend ethnicity and idiosyncrasy, and I would even say cultural particularity.
So there's sort of an odd sort of reverse discrimination in saying that these things are of no value because of who wrote them and when they were written.
Yeah, I mean, there's ideology involved here, historicism and a certain class consciousness that comes in from cultural Marxism and things like that. And it was, a lot of this movement of multiculturalism and an attack on the great books, stemmed from a kind of revolutionary attitude, a disdain for tradition, and generally speaking, for the pursuit of wisdom. Education has to be useful. It has to be productive of power, of kind of a fractured identity. you know, ethnic politics, oppressive classes, and the like, instead of just being about pursuit of wisdom and understanding and the goods of the soul, it becomes politicized, economicized, if you want to call it, and then it's anything but education at that point. It becomes a kind of social engineering project, mixed with a kind of pragmatism, careerism. And also, one has to remember that the origins of this movement of the Great Books was to move away from a kind of narrow, specialized training, purely practical education, to the pursuit of wisdom and the education of the whole person. And that's really the heart of the Great Books.
Mm-hmm. As it's the heart of Wyoming Catholic College.
That's right.
Now, if I'm interested in reading great books, or at least some of the great books, where should I begin? Should I head off for eBay and find my copy of the Britannica great books of the Western world, or what should I do?
Well, you don't have to pay much money now. Various websites, even Kindle has a lot of free editions of the great works. So accessibility isn't a problem. Of course, your local library. It's easy at used bookstores. It's easy to find these great books. The question is how to go about reading them. There's so many. It's a vast amount of reading, and the question is, do you need a guide? And the reason why we have this college is because we do think that, you know, education is a kind of apprenticeship into a craft. The craft of Western inquiry, Western intellectual, poetic inquiry and contemplation, and including the main disciplines, philosophy, theology, and literature, and history, and music, and art, and the like. And you know, it's really difficult to read these books. Number one, because a lot of them are difficult. They presuppose a certain wide-ranging understanding of the cultural context, the biography of the development of the ideas and the personages, and how this worked out in history. It's a very difficult thing to read these in a way that is beneficial and becomes an actual education instead of just an eclectic, you know, eclectic reading with no integrating heart. So what I'm saying is the best way to read these books is to find some sort of master craftsman, some guide to help one, you know, appreciate, understand, intelligently interpret, and really make these texts one's own. And so does that mean that you have to go to a great books liberal arts college for such an education? I would say that would be more or less the best way to go about it. But if one could find at least an informal way, a discussion group where you can bounce these ideas off people, maybe someone who's led one before and who's been through these books before, that's another option. You could find these online. You could find them in your local community, sometimes at libraries. That's what I would say about that.
And of course, you can subscribe to our Wyoming Catholic College Great Books podcast as well.
Well, that's one of the reasons we're doing this, is because not everybody had a chance to go to a Great Books college, and maybe doesn't have the leisure time to spend 3 or 4 hours a day. So we offer these podcasts as a kind of mission, our way of sharing what we're doing here at the college.
Great, great. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your time this morning.
You're welcome, James. Thank you.
God bless. Mortimer Adler, the man who pioneered the idea of the great books, said, "In the case of good books, the point is not to see how many of them you can get through, but how many can get through to you." It's in that spirit that we educate students at Wyoming Catholic College, and in the same spirit that we offer you these podcasts. I hope you'll subscribe and plan to listen as together we consider those rare and valuable books that are to be read wholly and with diligence and attention. For Wyoming Catholic College, I'm Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.